Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon here on KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. And I've got a great lineup of guests. We got some exciting folks to talk to about sound. I love sound. Sound's all about radio. So Dr. Richard Nelson and Hank Linford will be here to tell us about their Evening at Egan Lecture. It's entitled Voices of Glacier Bay, Listening Through the Art of Recording. They're going to be bringing in some of their sounds to let us sample a little bit about what they're going to be doing tonight. James Wyckoff will be here. The community garage sale is coming up October 4th, and so you'll need to get set for that, and he'll be giving us details. The Brew Crew will be coming by. I understand we're going to sample on the air, like I love to do, and they'll be telling us about the 2014 Third Annual Capital Brew Fest on Saturday, and Tom Paul and Greg McLaughlin will be here to talk about Saturday's Barn Dance. Right now, time for National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new organization has been created to work on improving the relationship between First Nations people and other Canadians. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The aim of the group, and consequently the new organization, is to rebuild trust. They say that could be a way of finding solutions to the many problems faced by Canada's Indigenous community. A panel of the group's members says the relationship must be rebuilt for the moral and economic good of the country. The new organization, Canadians for a New Partnership, is being led by two former prime ministers from opposite ends of the political spectrum, Liberal Paul Martin and Progressive Conservative Joe Clark. They will hold public lectures and debates on issues which divide Native and non-Native groups in an effort to bring them together.
This national dialogue between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Canadians has to be a permanent part of the scene. This country, economically, morally, our value systems are very much dependent upon how we relate to each other. The poverty that exists in the Aboriginal communities is just simply not acceptable. And for Canadians not to discuss it, and for Canadians not to understand what has to be done, is just wrong.
Some Native leaders agree that the dialogue needs to begin. A former national chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Ovid Mercury, says they don't all agree on all the issues, but every member of the group agrees the conversation has to begin somewhere. Some reaction was more skeptical, with criticism of the group's sources of funding and the involvement of former prime ministers, adding that perhaps what's needed is to take the issue outside political circles, while some Native leaders say true reconciliation needs more than talk. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Tribal leaders, health professionals, and Native organizations are seeking to develop long-term solutions to contract support costs, or CSC. Tribes across the country administer health care through contracts or self-governance. In 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled tribes must be paid their full CSC, regardless of appropriations by Congress. Many are worried direct service tribes, those that receive primary care from the Indian Health Service, could be impacted by the requirement. Andy Joseph Jr. is a board member of the National Indian Health Board.
To me, it's a real serious issue. It's a crisis in Indian country. By getting some of the health care cut from the federal service unit, to me, that means lives of our people.
Joseph also works on health issues for the Colville Confederated Tribes and chairs the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board.
Because of the fully funding of contract support costs, a lot of different tribes are looking at this as an opportunity to take on the government's responsibility. Because of that, there's this new shortfall that's coming up that IHS is going to have to figure out where to get the money from.
Leaders say health services are already and continually underfunded. The National Indian Health Board is asking for unity on the issue among self-governance and direct service tribes, and are asking for tribal leaders to advocate. Jefferson Keel is Lieutenant Governor of the Chickasaw Nation.
We need tribal leaders to come and voice their support, and then we need to go to Congress and get Congress to help us in addressing the budget shortfalls, the appropriations that are needed. You know, and the bottom line is, if we can spend $1 billion in Iraq and Afghanistan rebuilding their health clinics and those, surely we can spend just a fraction of that here addressing the needs in Native America. That's what my concern is.
Congress created a path for CSC in fiscal year 2014, and work groups are examining options for the future. The issue was of concern among many people this week at the National Indian Health Board Annual Conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Our democracy is a government of the people, for the people. Let's keep it that way. Vote on November 4th. Get registered. Cast your vote. It's that simple. More information at nativenews.net. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska at 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host today. It is my great pleasure to have two guys here who are doing something with sound, because sound is exactly what we're about here. So Dr. Richard Nelson and Hank Linfer are going to do a talk tonight at the Evening at Egan Lecture. I think this is the second one of the season. And they'll be on at 7 o'clock in the downstairs library area in up on the UAS campus. The talk is called Voices of Glacier Bay, Listening Through the Art of Recording. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So this is kind of unique. I don't know. Have there been other studies where people have just gone out and tried to record everything in an area, all of the natural sound?
Well, not a whole lot in the national parks as far as we know. This is probably the most comprehensive one that's ever been done in an American national park. Of course, the people have been recording natural sounds for a long time, and there are a lot of people who are building large libraries of natural sounds. But a project like this, I think this is a little bit of a beginner for the Park Service.
So what were the roles that the two of you played here?
Well, we've been out camping and recording primarily last summer, but this summer as well. And we both have our own set of recording gear. We go ashore and go different directions and spend the morning chasing sounds. And we come back and compare notes and share a meal and go back out and chase some more sounds. So just two good friends and recordists with some fantastic equipment in a very gorgeous place.
Can you briefly describe the equipment that you use for this?
Primarily, we're using parabolic dishes with very sensitive omnidirectional microphones mounted in the center of them.
Omnidirectional meaning picks up all the way around.
Right. Yeah. And so you get the dish that's reflecting all that sound right to the end of that microphone from all the directions from the sides of the dish. In addition to that, we've got an open set of mics that records in stereo. And you just set that on a tripod and back away from it. And you can got a 100-foot cable, so you can leave it in the woods and walk away.
Now, the days of audio tape are all over. You did this all digitally, right?
Correct.
Digital recording. Yeah.
Yeah, we have fairly straightforward digital recorders. They're not very big, probably about six, seven inches long and 4 inches wide, that we hang over our shoulders, and you put a data card in there, and it's pretty simple to operate. You can go as expensive as maybe $2,500 or so for a recorder. These are more like $600, and you can actually record pretty good sounds on much less expensive recorders. Mm-hmm. It gets better all the time, so you don't have to have big fancy equipment, and the parabolic microphone that Hank was describing, it acts like a telephoto lens on a camera. So it has a shotgun mic, is a long, skinny microphone that just has a very precise aim. It doesn't magnify the sound. It just focuses on the sound. The parabolic dish with a regular microphone in it just has that effect of amplifying or magnifying the sound. And it's very fun to use because you can precisely locate anything that's, you know, birds flitting around in the bushes and stuff like that, or the bear that you can't see and you didn't know was there until you started to hear something rustling around. And you move that dish back and forth, and you can get within inches of exactly where that sound is coming from. It's really cool. It's really fun to do.
I love the idea of basically recording these sounds. I guess the question is, now that you have them, what kind of uses are you going to make of them? What are they for?
Most immediately, we handed last summer's sounds into the Park Service, and that's the agency that's sponsoring this project. And they made them available to their interpretive staff. And already, this season, that staff is integrating those sounds into their presentations for the visitors in the park. And the majority of visitors in Glacier Bay are on cruise ships. And, you know, that cruise ship has a low rumble, and it means those folks aren't really hearing anything. But as you're passing the landscape, the park ranger on board that boat can say, hey, if you were on shore, this is what it would sound like.
Well, this is what it would sound like if what was on shore was a crane, right?
So that's a recording I made just a couple days ago. So fall time is when those birds move through Glacier Bay and Gustavus.
Mm-hmm.
And I set a microphones out with the help of another recording guy in Gustavus. And we left that out all night, and we recorded them on the ground in the night. And then that particular recording was in the morning when they lifted up, and they flew right past those stationary mics and got that really close-up clean recording of those guys.
If you close your eyes, it's all there. If you know what a crane looks like when it flies, I mean, you don't need the visual at all. The sound just does the whole thing, and it's a unique perspective. It's really, really cool.
It's the beauty of natural sounds recording is that you can extract yourself from the visual and focus on the dimension of the world that we so seldom pay attention to, and that's the sound. Sure, we pay a lot of attention to music and to speech and all the human sounds, but we very rarely pay much attention at all to the natural sounds. And it's great to play these recordings and to watch people listening to them and see how it's opening up the world to them in a way they've never experienced before.
Yeah, let's have a loon.
That's a common loon. There's nothing common about a common loon. I have to say it's the most incredible animal. And it was recorded on a lake way up in the Brooks Range on a lake called Takahula Lake, very remote with mountains around it. You hear that sort of resonating, echoey sound of that loon's voice coming back off the mountains around the sides of that lake. And that, of course, is one of the great sounds we have here in North America. A Koyukon Indian elder once told me an expression they have in their language that goes, "Otsa dodzen tonrido bisni inilon," which means when a loon calls on a lake, it's the greatest sound a human can hear.
I used to camp out on the Kenai, and there's a lake up there that has loons on it. I can remember that sound in the early morning, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, they'd be calling.
Yeah, there's some other pretty good contenders for that greatest sounds title, but the loon's definitely right up there.
Well, here's a greatest sound. This one is the humpback. So echo is something I haven't heard before. Is this a whale on the surface?
Well, yeah, this was recorded along Chatham Strait. There was a big mountain behind where these whales were bubble net feeding. And they were recorded from very, very close range. You know, really basically, they were coming right under the boat that I was in. We got some fabulous humpback whale recordings in Glacier Bay, especially Hank did from his skiff. Really, really amazing. I don't know if you want to say anything about that, Hank.
Well, recording is a lot like wildlife photography. You just have to spend enough time in a place with a camera at the ready or the recorder at the ready for all the conditions to line up to make a great recording. And again, thinking about photography, a gorgeous photograph, the light has to be just right, the composition has to be right, the animal comes into that perfectly lit scene just at the right moment. And for recording, especially if you're in a boat, the water has to be flat, calm. There can't be any boats around. There can't be any planes around. And if the animal's in the right spot, if there's a mountain right there to offer that resonance, you get that cathedral-like sound. And I had an experience last August where all of that lined up. And not only were there whales there, but they're making the sound that they seldom do, which is this huge trumpet-like sound. And we'll play that this evening.
So there's going to be some fabulous sounds in your presentation this evening. And that's downstairs in the UAS library. It's starting at 7 p.m. Dr. Richard Nelson, Hank Linfer, going to talk about all of this wonderful recording that they did in the Glacier Bay National Park over the last 2 years, I guess, that the project ran, that you were out camping and walking around and recording sounds. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Folks, this is one you don't want to miss. Tonight, 7 o'clock, come see these guys. Come. You can close your eyes.
You
can sit in the back with your eyes closed.
That's
bring your dark glasses so nobody knows that you your eyes are closed. Anyway, great sounds. Let's go out with the wolf. And gentlemen, good show tonight with your
Oh, meeting. Thanks so much. It's great
thanks,
to be
Pat.
Here. Thank
here
you.
Is Bird Note. Just off our continent's North Atlantic coast, hungry northern gannets are gathering in their hundreds. Their streamlined, meter-long bodies are feathered in satin white, their golden heads tipped with a bill like a spear. They wheel and turn over a shoal of fish, and then the hunt begins. From 100 feet in the air, the gannets plummet head first, gaining momentum with powerful wing strokes. Just before hitting the water, they pull their wings close to their sides, piercing the surface in the shape of an arrowhead at 60 miles per hour, a plunge dive that carries a gannet well below the surface where its lethal beak clamps down on a fish. Bobbing up, the gannet shakes its fishy prey with vigor, juggles it a bit, then swallows it head first. A brisk splashing bath, and it's up in the air for another dive. Such high-speed collisions would knock most creatures out cold, but gannets have evolved air sacs in both the neck and shoulders that cushion the impact, and their skulls are specially reinforced. When they're on the hunt, gannets offer a spectacular combination of beauty and lethality, drawing droves of tourists to places like St. Bonaventure Island in Quebec. More than 100,000 gannets nest here in summer, tourists watching in awe as the birds perform their hunting acrobatics. Until early fall, when the tourists head home and the gannets head out to sea for the winter, only to return next spring, when the spectacle begins anew.
It's 19 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is a perennial favorite on the show here. What's happening is James Wyckoff, as usual, is putting together the community garage sale. It's at Centennial Hall on October 4th. Doors will be open at 9 in the morning. And, James, I understand there's still some booth space left.
Well, there is. As usual, everybody, including myself, waits till the very last minute, it seems like. We do like to have...
That's the Juneau way.
Right. Juneau time.
Yeah.
And so this is the 19th annual community garage
sale.
Holy,
19?
Yes.
19 of these, okay.
Yeah, so if anybody's got any great ideas of how we're going to celebrate the 20th
annual
next year, please let me know. Yep. And it's just a real hoot. I volunteered to organize it just because it's a lot of fun. It's like a 70-family garage sale held inside Centennial Hall the first Saturday in October.
Yep.
And just some of the basics. Most people buy one space at $26. What we do is we just share the cost of the rental of the Centennial Hall ballroom among the participants.
Yeah. Okay.
And that averages out to about $26. So some people have a lot of stuff or larger things like bed frames and cribs, that sort of thing, you know. So if you need larger than 10 foot long and 8 foot deep, well, then you can get two spaces or three spaces side by side. And
if you want to roll a car in, say,
yeah,
part it out, sell the motor, sell the transmission, right?
Yeah, okay. A sailboat, you know.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
And interesting, you bring
it's
that
27
up.
Feet long and 8 feet wide. I'm just thinking I'd have to collapse the sail, but I'll think about it.
Or like one fellow did, he just brought in a lot of photographs of the boat.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right.
And had the photographs all laid out there. He did sell it. Yeah,
did he get his price?
That I don't know. You know how garage sales are. There's a little haggling going on.
Yeah, I know. You can a deal is possible.
Yeah. And they didn't work the final deal at the garage sale, but they made the contact and went down and looked at the boat and that sort of thing. And
I don't know if I'd buy a sailboat sight unseen.
Yeah, right. Just off a photograph. Yeah. You didn't show me the other side. hold this boat upside down. Now you got it. And so just about everything you can imagine there will be there. And we open up the doors at 6 o'clock in the morning for people to start bringing their things in. And one of the advantages of being one of the participants there is that
The world famous walk around.
Yes, you get to see what your neighbors have there, a lot of trading, buying and selling going on just between vendors before we open up the doors to the public. So that's a little bit of a positive thing.
There's one of these things held in Fairbanks years ago. I went, I had a little booth, and I had a lamp. And it was, I thought it was an ugly lamp. I mean, it had been in my household for quite a while, and it was time I expected. It belonged to somebody else, and I was just kind of holding on to it. I decided it was going to go. So exactly this happened. We set up at 6 in the morning, right? Yeah. About 6:30, a guy walks by. He looks at the lamp, and he says, what do you want for that? And I said, I don't know, $5. And he said, sure. He buys it. So I walk around a half hour later, and here's my lamp for $100 over in the corner.
Very entrepreneurial.
Highly entrepreneurial. So
So all those funny things go on like that. You know, it's a real hoot. I've not yet received a negative comment about their experience there at the garage sale. Hundreds of people show up for this thing, so it's well attended. People look forward to it. You know, here in Juneau, it's garage selling is pretty much a sport. People plan it out.
We should get a bill up before the legislature to make garage sailing the state sport of Alaska.
Oh, good idea. Good idea.
I mean, we have a state rifle. We should have a state sport. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. So if somebody wants to participate, if they want a 26, want an 8x10 space for $26, or I notice you have half spaces you can share with somebody and like that.
Yeah.
You get together with your neighbors and buy a space if you only got a pot and a pan that you want to get rid of, and maybe your neighbor's got a card table or something.
And I'm more than willing to coordinate two people that don't know one another. If you just got a couple of items that have some value to them, but you don't need a whole space, well, then you can share a space, and that's just half the price, $13. The two people pay $13 a piece, and away you go.
How do they do this? How do you get a space?
Well, the best way to do it is to go to the Community Garage Sale Facebook page, and you'll find that at facebook.com/Juneau
community garage sale.
I notice that's all run together, so it's right. One big long word. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there you get all the information you need, which is it's two pages there. One is the application for participation, and it's pretty simple. It's just your name, telephone number, and address, and if you want one space, two space, or whatever, and then you make out a check, and the address is on that form there. You send it to me, make out the check to me, which is kind of nice. And then each check I receive in the mail, I give the person a courtesy call, let them know that I received the call, okay. The check, and got them all set up.
And then you
up.
Just lump that together, and that's what pays for the hall rental.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so I noticed a couple of rules that we should make sure everybody understands. You can't sell food, right?
Right.
Okay, and you can't bring kittens and sell live animals.
That's
not
right.
Possible either. So those two things. Mm-hmm. Now, what about firearms?
No firearms, no whiskey, no okay. Live animals.
Okay, good. And you said pack it in, pack it out.
Yeah,
meaning everything that anybody brings has got to go off the floor at
that's
the end of
right.
The sale.
That's right. The Centennial Hall can't deal with all the unsold items that are left over.
And if you fill up their dumpster, they're going to come find you.
That's exactly right. Okay. You know. So whatever you – the sale goes on till 1 o'clock. Okay. And,
everything's got to be cleared out of there
yeah.
After that.
And twice I've sold everything on my table by noon. So
yeah.
You don't have to stay till 1 o'clock. If you're finished or you got other things to do, you're going to leave early. But you have to take anything that hasn't been sold with you.
Yeah. Okay. So the community garage sale, it's an annual event. This is the 19th annual. Next year is the 20th. Are you going to have a suggestion box out for ideas for
will.
The 20th?
Yeah. Yes.
put out a suggestion box. Ideas for the 20th annual community garage sale. What kind of craziness shall we do? I don't know, maybe sell in costume or something?
I think so. Maybe yeah. The best hat.
Best hat? Might be.
Yeah.
Might be, yeah. Good enough. Okay, so it's coming up. James Wyckoff is the guy to contact. The Facebook page is Juno Community Garage Sale, all one word, run together, and just go on there. It's got all the details. You can download the application for participation and the Community Garage Sale instructions. They all pop up, so you can print them right off. Send him a check made out to him, and you're all set. You got your space. Then start gathering stuff up around the house and around the garage and around your kids' room and out of the den and underneath the house and all those other places. As long as it isn't live, it isn't a firearm, it isn't whiskey, or it isn't food, you can bring it, and it'll work just fine for everybody to have a look at. And if you're part of the 6 o'clock in the morning setup crew, you get the free walk around, and maybe you can find a $3 lamp and boost the price by 400%.
I couldn't say it any better.
Hey,
that was
right.
Perfect.
All right, thank you. Okay, hey, James, always a pleasure.
My pleasure, too.
Be sure to tune in on Saturdays to KTOO to hear some new shows on the air. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has moved to 10 a.m., and at 11, we're now bringing you NPR's latest hit, the TED Radio Hour. At 2 p.m., catch the hot news show, Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. Information on the changes are at ktoo.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 12th of September, 2014. It was on this day in 1940 the cave paintings were discovered in Lascaux, France, by four French teenagers and their dog. They were out exploring one day, and they found the main cave, about 66 feet wide, 16 feet high, with drawings on the walls in charcoal that has been found to be about 17,000 years old, about 2,000 drawings, mostly of horses, bison, red deer, stags, some cats, extinct cattle, some human figures, geometric shapes, and the outlines of human hands, possibly the signatures of the artists. And there also appears to be a star chart, clusters of stars that resemble Taurus and the Pleiades. It's the birthday of Irénée Joliot-Curie, born in Paris, 1897. She was the daughter of Pierre and Marie Curie, homeschooled as part of an educational experiment run by her parents and their friends called the cooperative, the adults, scientists, experts taking turns teaching one another's children. During World War I, she helped her mother operate mobile X-ray units in field hospitals, her mother Marie, who discovered radium. She began assisting her mother in the radium laboratory at the University of Paris, met a young chemical engineer named Frédéric Joliot. In 1935, the two of them won the Nobel Prize in chemistry for artificially creating radioactive elements. And then, like her mother, Irénée Joliot-Curie developed leukemia as a result of her close work with radioactive substances and died at the age of 58. And it was on this date in 1846, Elizabeth Barrett and Robert Browning eloped. They'd been courting in secret for a year and a half through the mail, unbeknownst to her father. It all began when Robert Browning wrote Miss Barrett a fan letter saying, "I love your verses with all my heart, and I love you too." And she wrote back to him. She was an invalid. She was a heavy user of morphine. Her father did not approve of Browning. They were married on this date in 1846. She went back home afterward, stayed for 1 week, then ran off to Italy with Browning and never saw her father again. Here's a poem for today by Robert Frost, "Choose Something Like a Star." O star, the fairest one in sight, we grant your loftiness the right to some obscurity of cloud. It will not do to say, of night, since dark is what brings out your light. Some mystery becomes the proud, but to be wholly taciturn in your reserve is not allowed. Say something to us we can learn by heart, and when alone repeat, say something, and it says, I burn. But say with what degree of heat, talk Fahrenheit, talk centigrade, use language we can comprehend, tell us what elements you blend. It gives us strangely little aid, but does tell something in the end, and steadfast as Keats' aramite, not even stooping from its sphere, it asks a little of us here, it asks of us a certain height. So when at times the mob is swayed to carry praise or blame too far, we may choose something like a star to stay our minds on and be stayed. Robert Frost's Choose Something Like a Star, from Collected Poems, Prose, and Plays, published by the Library of America, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
It's 27 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News, Juneau, Alaska.
25th Annual Juneau Barn Dance season kicks off this Saturday, September 13th, 7:30 to 11 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown. Help celebrate a quarter century of this community tradition with a night of music and dancing to lively French-Canadian tunes by the Taku Gales. Tom Paul will teach and call contra and square dances for all abilities. As always, you don't need experience or a partner. Discounts for students and seniors, free for SOG and JVs, sponsored by the Juneau International Folk Dancers. Barn Dance, Saturday.
Tonight on 360 North, from 8 to 10:30, enjoy another evening of song and dance at Celebration 2014, the biennial gathering of tribes from Southeast Alaska and beyond. Platts Energy Week is next, with independent energy news and analysis. BioCentury this week follows at 11, and BBC News Night at 11:30. It's a great way to look at public affairs tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
It's 25 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next two guests are here with props. We have equipment in the studio. So here's the deal. We're coming up on the third annual Brewfest here in Juneau, and Wayne Stevens and John Blasco are here, and they're going to tell us all about this event. But first, we have to get properly lubricated for the process. So on the microphone, you are about to hear the sound of...
What a great beautiful sound.
Oh, God, I love that sound. Yeah. Yeah. And so this is some free ride APA. And it's one of the thousands of beers that will be, literally thousands of beers that will be.
96 different brands, flavors.
Yeah. Okay. How many?
96.
96 different brands and flavors. Yeah. Okay.
So just about the time we sing,
I have a sip of this, so I'm ready for this interview.
And just about the time we sample all 96 and sing our way through the song.
Yeah, yeah. 96 bottles of beer on the wall, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. All right, so this is going to be held at the Jack, and it starts at 1 o'clock on Saturday?
Yep, 1 yeah. o'clock tomorrow at yeah. the Jack. Mm-hmm. And it's our third annual one. We're I just checked, and we have about 40 tickets left. So it's we're nearing being sold out, which is very exciting. It's
What's a ticket cost?
It's $30 if you're going to participate in the tasting of the 96 beers, uh-huh. or it's $5 if you're going to be the responsible driver, which we also do encourage.
Okay, good enough. All right, so $30 with the beer, and you got but there's more going on here. You got three bands. So I know C. Scott Fry is going to be playing, Susu and the Prophets, and DNRNA.
Yeah,
which
actually, Susu and the Prophets had to back out,
back out
last minute, but we were very lucky to fill it with Cousin Curtis, who's actually a teacher at Thunder Mountain, a friend of mine, so he'll be filling in for them. But, yeah, three live music acts, mm-hmm. Along with the eight Alaskan breweries plus the distributors that will be providing all the beer. And then there'll be three food vendors as well.
Yeah. So it's I noticed the Spinning Pig and the Flaming Hibiscus. Who else?
And Smiley's Popcorn.
Smiley's Popcorn. Okay. Flaming Hibiscus is one we probably haven't heard from. This is Polynesian foods from Hawaii, Samoa, and Tonga.
Yeah, it's new. It's Julia Funumi, I believe is her name, and she's new. And I hear good things about it, so I'm excited to try it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And Spinning Pig's an absolute favorite around town. They really do a great job. And the third group... Again, was...
The new one is Cousin Curtis.
No, the food.
Oh, food. Excuse me. Smiley's Popcorn.
Oh, Smiley's Popcorn. Okay. Yep. I didn't write it down. Okay, and I guess, what's the drill here? Basically, you've got 96 different beers. You've got eight breweries. So each one brings nine? Is that how that works?
Actually...
Was there 12? Was there a rule? Or
no, no. You know, a lot of it... you know, most of the breweries are bringing about 4 to 5 different beers, but specialties is actually coming with a big, large list this year. And so when you come in the door, you'll get a program that'll have a map of the full layout where everybody's booths are. Inside that will be a full list of every beer. And so, you know, the name, the type, and everything that you can try and mark it off, which ones you like, and make sure to ask the breweries or the distributors where you can get it.
It's beer only. There's...
Beer only. We will have water and whatnot for the designated drivers. But there's hard ciders, gluten frees.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a few of the fruit beers on the list. Mm-hmm. Some unique stuff, well traveled stuff. So,
So the breweries are the Anchorage Brewing Company, the Haines Brewing Company. They're as a matter of fact, they're moving into downtown Haines. I guess sometime in the next couple of years, they're building a new brewery.
I just heard that. Yeah, they're in the planning stages.
I was over there for the fair. Yeah. Hoodoo Brewing out of Fairbanks. I'm not familiar with them. That's one I got to get in line for. Denali Brewing Company from Talkeetna. Of course, our own local Alaskan Brewing Company. Broken Tooth Brewing, which is up in Anchorage. Baranoff Island Brewing from Sitka. The Kenai River Brewing Company from Soldotna, Alaska. Midnight Sun Brewing, which is another Anchorage firm, and the Glacier Brew House out of Anchorage.
Yep.
Yeah. So just a real cross-section. We've got a terrific little micro and mini brewery operation going in the state of Alaska.
I actually just found out today that Alaska has the most craft breweries per capita.
No kidding.
So apparently we like to drink our craft beers.
Yeah. You know, I've been reading about these one-release beers. Have you heard of anybody doing that in the state? This is I was reading about this, that basically a brew company will make one beer, and they will make like a certain number of kegs of it available to one place. And people line up hours ahead, and you drink until the last keg is gone, and that's it. That brew will not be sold again. It's kind of like the when they do a
seasonal stuff here with the last.
Yeah, when they do that kind of thing. Yeah, I got there just after Survival ran out this last time, and I was there with my little jug to get a jug of Survival. What do they call those things?
Growler.
Growler. Yeah, my growler of Survival, and it was gone. So I had to settle for something else. Anyway, okay, and the three distributors who are bringing in the beer are K&L, Odom, and Specialty Imports.
Yep.
So who organizes this insane operation?
Well, it's put on by the Juneau Rotary Club here in Juneau, one of the three clubs here in Juneau. And Andy and Corey Mills actually came with the idea back when they moved home from Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of spearhead it, but we have a very fortunate and proud sponsor this year is our charity partner, United Way, and Wayne Stevens here can talk about that. So they definitely provide manpower, advertising, and everything else, but they're we're very proud to be a part of their organization this year to be able to contribute to them, and I'll let Wayne talk about United Way a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate Rotary choosing United Way as their charity of choice, and certainly very, very appreciative of Rotary's selection of United Way. And it's perfect timing. We're just kicking off our annual fall giving campaign, so it's a great way to start that process and raise the awareness of the fall giving campaign. We have 33 partner agencies with whom we work, and so money that we raise help to fund many of those organizations and many of the programs. We work with CORE Alaska, and they've contributed $25,000 to continue our reading tutor program, where we get volunteers to go into the school and work with kids K through second grade who are not quite reading at grade level and try to boost their reading skills. And you know, once a child gets their reading skills, they have a far better chance of reaching the finish line and playing basketball for Coach Blasco. So we also have we work a lot with the food banks and food pantries and have a food resource group now and trying to identify opportunities to better meet the needs of those who may have challenges finding a meal, and working with the Clinton Hyder Regional Housing Authority and the Central Council on some income stability program with the VITA tax returns, helping folks file their tax returns and qualifying for the earned income tax credits and things like that. So we've got a lot going on, and it's certainly great to be a partner with Rotary. And having been a Rotarian now since 1985, I always enjoy these kinds of events. And having run many large events for many years in my past life, reminds me why I don't do it anymore.
Okay. So we have two legs here. One is you get to sample a lot of different beers and like that, but the other is you're really helping out a tremendous part of our giving culture.
And that's what we're definitely trying to portray to everybody, is that, you know, it's not only going to be a very fun social community event that 800 people are going to attend, but your money's going to two very good organizations that are putting it right back into our own community.
Right.
So it's a dual purpose.
So everybody wins on this thing. Yeah. Okay. So one more time. It starts at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at the Jack. There are 40 tickets left.
Before we started this presentation.
How does someone acquire one of those 40 tickets?
They go online. Capbrewfest.com is the only way to buy tickets. If you want to be a gambling man and show up the day of, good luck to you, because we've been selling about 10 tickets an hour, so my guess is we'll be sold out by the morning. But definitely go online, capbrewfest.com, and you can try showing up tomorrow, see what happens.
I recommend getting
online.
I'd go online tonight and get a ticket nailed down solid. Okay, guys, thank you so much. Guests Wayne Stevens and John Blasco, thanks for kicking in. Thanks for doing seems like a pretty good part of the organizing and operating of this thing. Yes. And have a good time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And enjoy your APA.
Thank you for the beer.
Thank you.
It's 12 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are here to tell us about a thing which is coming up, I guess it's tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night, 7:30 to 11. And this is the first of the season's barn dances. And according to my guest, Tom Paul, this is not the 23rd, as we have been touting on the air, but actually the 25th of these
events. It's at least the 25th, yeah. Odette Foster, or Odette Edgar now, started it back in 1988. And I don't think we had regular dances that year, but we did start having regular dances for sure in 89. So it's at least 25 years.
Boy, this has been going on for a bit here. So let's see. This is at... where is it?
What's it? St. Anne's Parish Hall.
Okay.
Yeah, on 5th Street.
Yeah. Okay. And it's 7:30 to 11. Is there a charge for coming?
Yeah. Yeah, there is a charge. It's,
okay.
$2
at the door kind of thing.
It's at the door, yeah.
Yeah.
$8 for adults.
Yeah.
It's a break for students and seniors.
Uh-huh.
And folk festival members and Juneau International folk dancers get a dollar off or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But the folk dancers sponsor it. We're kind of under their umbrella of a nonprofit, it's really a separate group of folks that organize it, pretty much.
Can you give me an idea of what the dancing looks like?
Well,
is it like square dancing?
I call both contra dances and square dances. We also have waltzes and other... reels and things like that. But contra dances are like square dances. They have the same kind of figures. You swing your partner, you do-si-do, things like that. But it's done in lines. So there's two lines facing each other rather than a square formation square dances. But it's pretty much the same figures. Mm-hmm. The thing about that dancing, it's really social dancing, and you dance with everybody in the hall. We have a tradition where you change partners every dance, but that's not necessary. People can, if they're not comfortable with that, they can dance with their partner. But by hook or by crook, you're going to dance with everybody in the hall.
Yeah,
because you move down, you progress down the line, and it's a very social kind of dancing, and it's as we were talking earlier, it's not rocket science. You can do it. Whether if you got two left feet or two right feet, although you do have to know your left from your right most of the time. But and there's no fancy steps to it. We walk through the dance at the beginning each dance, and so you learn what figures are involved, and then as a caller, I tell you before you actually have to do them as the dance goes along how to dance the dance. So it's
Hey Greg, who's doing the music this time?
The Taco Gales are doing the music, and that's my wife Liz and my son Leaf and me. So it's the three of us. It's a family band.
Uh-huh. What's the instrumentation?
It's concertina, fiddle, and guitar.
Oh, okay. And have you already selected the program? Have the two of you coordinated this so you know what you're going to be playing, and he knows what he's going to be calling?
No.
Well, I have an idea what I'm going to be called.
I'm together. I have an idea what I'm going to be playing.
We're not together. It doesn't matter what they play French Canadian and Celtic music, and French Canadian especially is ideal for dancing. Much of it is written to dance to. So, it's whatever they play, we can dance to it. Because they play good dance.
Yes.
And the Gales have been at it. I don't know if you guys played the first year of dances or not, but you probably.
I think so. Dances for
years and years. So
Andy Ferguson was with us then, and we played. We've been playing dances for many years. And one of the things that I'll watch Tom, and I'll watch what the dance is going to be. And a lot of times we'll have a list of tunes, and I'll think to myself, well, that maybe a jig fits with this, with this particular dance. So let's do a set of jigs for it, or these tunes will work well with this dance. And sometimes Tom has specific dances, and he wants specific tunes. Those are called chestnuts.
Chestnuts, yeah.
And there's a dance that goes with with a tune, and they're coupled together.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a tradition. You could do the dance without that tune, but it's the dance fits the tune really well, and it's traditional to do them together.
And people who've been to more than one dance are probably going to be kind of tuned into that.
Well, yeah, some of the names, they'll recognize. Lady of the Lake and Hull's Victory and Money Musk.
Galipede and some of those. Yeah.
But, we don't. That's the esoteric of.
Yeah, you're making me wish I pulled a couple of samples of these. Unfortunately, I didn't, because the music is really fabulous to just kind of listen to. It's good listening music.
Yeah, so everybody's definitely welcome. We've got a dance a month coming up this fall, this season. And tomorrow's the 13th. We've got one there. And then, so we've been talking about it. And then the 25th of October. And Thanksgiving Friday is a traditional thing. The Friday after Thanksgiving, we'll have a dance that day, which is late in the month. It's about the 28th, I think. Mm-hmm. And then our holiday dance is the 13th of December, and we also have a New Year's Eve dance, traditional one that happens. So,
okay. Know any of the bands who are playing?
Well, Full Circle, all I know, is playing in December, and Impromptu with Mike Sicari is playing hammer, dulcimer, and Fuller on fiddle. They'll play one or the other of those dances, and Happy to Be Here may play a dance. We haven't really found out their availability yet, and Rumblefish, the old-time string band, have played a lot of dances, so they may also be on the...
You calling all these, or is Odette calling any?
Odette calls, and I call, and Susie Kendig is a new caller in town. She moved here a year or two ago.
A couple of years now.
Yeah, and she actually... I should tell you that next Saturday on the 20th, is a little twist to the regular contra dance thing. She's calling a techno contra dance. at UAS. And I don't know too much about it, but I do know that techno contra uses, instead of traditional string band music, live music, and we always have live music at our barn dances, but I'm pretty sure this will be canned and techno. Techno music.
You're intriguing me here.
This is going to be interesting, I think. This is something that's happened in other parts of the country, and I'm not sure the story of how it got going up at UAS, but Susie's is a game to give it a try, and... So she's going to call a techno dance there next Saturday, the 20th.
The 20th, okay. We've got to get in touch with her and get her on the show. I got to find out more about this. Techno music is a lot of Moog, or not Moogs anymore, but synthesizer stuff.
Right. Yeah. And they typically have black lights or strobe lights going on and stuff like that. So
right.
I don't know. Younger folks may enjoy that rather than if they're not partial to the string band music. But
I'm watching Greg while he's saying this. I'm not seeing a conversion of the Taku Gales to techno.
I'm not seeing a conversion, but I am intrigued by this.
You are going to amp the concertina here.
I am intrigued by this.
Yeah. Are you going to go and kind of?
I think so.
No, I think.
Yeah, I didn't know about this. And it sounds exciting.
So anyway, if there are people who are interested in the techno contra but want to give a little training in contra dancing itself, they should come tomorrow night.
Sounds like a distinct
show them how.
Yeah, and if you got that in your shoe, then you're all set for the techno.
Right. Right.
All right. Okay, guys. One more time, it's at 7:30 at St. Anne's Parish Hall. $8 at the door. A little break for students, kids. And members of the International Folk Dancing Organization.
Right.
And what's the other one?
Folk Festival members.
And Folk Fest members.
Yeah,
they're
the co-sponsors of the dance,
Bring your membership card. Nobody has one of those. Okay.
Bring some soft-soled shoes and have fun. Your smile muscles get a workout at these
things. Yeah. First barn dance of the season coming up, the 25th annual season of the barn dances here in town. Thanks.
Bet.
Whole bunch going on. UAS Corner tonight, the evening at Egan, is at 7 o'clock up at the library. That's the Sounds, Voices of Glacier Bay, listening through the Art of Recording. The Community Garage Sale is coming up October 4th. You need to get registered for it. The Brew Crew is having the Brewfest 1 to 5 at the Jack tomorrow. And tomorrow night, 7:30 to 11, is the first barn dance of the season. And this is KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We're also broadcasting on translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, it's K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on 88.1 megahertz over K201 AM, and K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion and Nicey Strait, KTOO has a signal on 89.9 megahertz, K210 AS. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Monday at 3, Scott Burton is the host for Juneau Afternoon. He'll have Hannah Lindoff here. She'll be talking about her new early readers book, Mary's Wild Winter Feast. Chuck Smith and Victoria Wiley de Echevera will be here to talk about Tuesday's talk about climate change and indigenous people, and we'll have the usual features of Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more on Tuesday 3 on KTOO News.